Hello, and welcome to the inaugural Bristol Men in Early Years Network podcast. Shaddai Tembo and myself, Craig Black, were fortunate enough to talk to Yue Zhu, lecturer in Children and Family Studies at the University of Portsmouth. Hopefully this is the first of many podcasts, but given that it's our first, please excuse any audio blips, which will be ironed out. So hello, Yue, welcome to our podcast. Nice to meet you.
Hello, Rick, and hello, Shad.
Just to let our listeners know a little bit of background information about you, could you just let us know sort of how you got to this place, roughly?
All right. Yeah. Hello, everyone. My name is Yue Shi. I come from China originally and have been living in the UK for 6 years, I think, and mainly in the major cities like Birmingham, London, Glasgow, and now in Portsmouth. I work as a lecturer in Children and Family Studies at the University of Portsmouth School of Education and Childhood Studies at the moment. And I've been doing research on gender and early childhood education for a couple of years, focusing on the cultural differences between China, Hong Kong, and the UK.
Could you go into a little detail into why you chose early years and not any other area?
Okay, yeah, to be honest, I ended up in doing an undergraduate study in early years by accident.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, that's related to Chinese culture, whereas before we enter university, most of us know nothing about the majors at universities. So it's usually the parents who choose those majors for you, unless you have a really particular taste of what you're going to do. And usually when parents choose majors for their children, they usually go for like business, medicine, those high status and money-winning jobs. So for me, it was an accident because I didn't perform really well in the Chinese equivalent to A-level. So I ended up into a major of education. And then my parents said, okay, you look like someone who is outgoing in a sense. You might just become a teacher. And that's it. So I ended up in doing a bachelor's in education. And our program is very specific because after our first year, we can choose in between the general education pathway or early years pathway. So we get a chance to learn about this major in our first year. After that, I know, well, there's not so many men in this area, so yes. You can kind of take advantage of that by being one of the few. And also in China, being an early years major student, you have to learn dancing, piano, and painting, which are very interesting subjects. So that's also another reason why I ended up in this kind of major.
I definitely fell into it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also, I think speaking of gender stuff, I think part of myself, it also related back to my own childhood experiences. Mm. I don't know why, but since I was born, might be since I was born, or since I have my own memory, I always liked to stay with girls, just to play with them, and I don't like to play with boys.
Did that change at all? Because for me, I was very much sport and football driven, which pushed me towards boys. And then when sort of puberty kicked in for me, my friendship group spanned out a little bit more. Or was yours quite consistent then?
Mine's quite consistent so far, because since I started this major and I worked in these kind of sectors, always female dominated, so always surrounded by females.
So it reinforces that for you.
Yeah, so most of my friends are like females and women.
I just want to pick up on the piano and the dancing that they teach in early years. Can you just talk about the culture of early years? What's it like compared to British culture?
You mean the teachers?
Yeah,
or
the teaching, because, you know, they don't teach piano.
Yeah, we used to be very structured, so it's all organized activities from morning to afternoon. We start usually at 8, and when people arrive, when students arrive, they have breakfast first. And after that, they might go outside for a group activity like PE, physical running in a sense, which is like good for their health. And after that, they go back to their classrooms and do some organized singing, dancing, or writing, something like that. And then at noon time, we have lunch. And after lunch, the children are forced to sleep for about 2 hours. There might be two reasons for this, because like on the one hand, they think children at this particular age need much sleep so as to develop. That's one hand. And the other side is if they don't sleep at school, they will fall asleep like at 5 or 6 in the afternoon. And after that, they will wake up 10 or 11. Then that's the time the parents want to go to bed because they have job next day. So they want their children to be awake when they are back home in the night and then go to bed earlier. So it's very structured in terms of the culture in Chinese kindergartens. And you have to do lots of dancing, singing, this kind of activities. Mm. That's why the teachers have to at least be able to do something. I mean, you are not an expert in this kind of areas.
Yeah. Yeah, 'cause I think that sort of thing, and maybe this is what you're getting at, is that those sort of things are stapled on within school. And if you have a teacher that can do music at an adequate level, that's a real advantage at school. But it's not an expectation necessarily. So,
especially in the early years, where expressive arts and design is seen as quite negligible in the earliest foundation stage, but you know, in China, having being taught to teach the piano to teach the children, that seems like a really good skill.
Yes, but that holds many men back, to be honest, because some of them are not confident in those kind of areas. So they said, oh, I'm not going to be a 30 years teacher because I don't know how to play pianos. So there's gender stereotype in that, and also you can see a gender segregation,
yeah,
in terms of like usually the male teachers are expected to undertake courses like physical activities, right. And they say, oh, we're not good at painting artistic things. So you still see the gender divide.
And I suppose while the piano playing is good, if you're forcing someone into that, then you're sort of falling in the same trap. And so you're sort of touching on some of these interesting gender points. What is your current concern, and what are some of the real flagship issues that you see?
I think the most impressive thing about gender, both in the UK and in China, is the gender stereotypes, which are deeply rooted into people's mind. Because actually, I was surprised, because I was thinking, for a country like UK, where it's more developed somehow, and also because, for example, the gay marriage is now legal, so I would think it's more gender diversified and more open-minded in terms of different types of gender and different gender identities. But when I was doing my research, it seems that, I mean, it might be, it's complicated than just the saying, well, British people hold many gender stereotypes, but you still see where it comes from. There are lots of things which are strongly bonded with our body of being a man and a woman, and those subsequent gender stereotypes are still upwheels among men in people's minds. So I think this is something, it's really hard to challenge, because the reason why I think is mainly because it's so strongly bonded with our bodies. So we think we have different bodies, so we just don't change this. And when I was doing interviews with the children, when you ask people like, who is holding a baby, the first answer is always their mothers. So you can see many young children, they start from a very early age, that they've got an image. It's always moms who look after babies, and that will carry on and on. And I mean, this one is really hard to challenge, because in reality, it is our moms who give birth to babies. The reproductive function of female bodies is very, I mean, powerful in terms of affecting our gender stereotypes. So I think the thing is, from that end, I think we need to challenge this kind of caring arrangement. Whereas to show the children, it's not just the moms who look after babies, but also dads maybe. And also, it should start from the very beginning. Like, parents do get involved in children's rearing at the moment. And it's another hot topic, like fatherhood and things like that. Yeah. But I think it should start even earlier, from the very, very beginning. It's like, why can't men just be at home looking after babies? Yeah. At the moment, UK has done this very well in terms of having maternity holidays for, I think, for a longer time. Longer time. But why can't be longer time for dads as well?
Similar to Sweden, I think they've changed on
this. Yes.
Inherent social construct that the father has to go back to work and the mother has to sort of...
It's very deeply ingrained. I'm totally in agreement that the care provisions should be spread as evenly as possible, and you know, the father should be a loving, caring figure. There might be practical limitations that a man can't express milk and things like that, but actually the caring side should be the same. But even then, I was a couple of years ago, I was around a friend's house, and he turned to his dad and genuinely said, "Love you, Dad," and cuddled him, and I felt uncomfortable. And I knew that was my problem, but it was interesting that that was still ingrained from my childhood. Even though I know that that's not how it should be and that's not how I would be as a dad, that still plays in the back of my head. So
yeah.
That gets ingrained very early, doesn't it?
Yeah, and also to challenge the body essentializations as well. It's like we take for granted, like for example, if women give birth to the children, they have the natural capacity of looking after them. So we really need to change and challenge the body images of ourselves. And from our theories, we think like our bodies even actively participate in our society. Because I give you one example, which is very interesting about postnatal women in the UK and in China. You know, we've got cultures in China. When women give birth to a baby, she's required to stay on bed for a month.
Wow.
Yes. And there are some old traditions that you can't take showers, you can't wash your head. I think it's mainly because they think postnatal women are weak, so they need to be specially looked after. And also they have special requirements for food. Okay. So you can't eat certain things and this kind of stuff. And I double checked with my British friends. You don't have to stay on bed. And I've got some Chinese friends living in the UK, and they were like surprised to know that after I gave birth, they just sent me out of hospital.
Yeah,
I have to stay there for a few days and things like that. You can see this kind of difference. It's like it is about your bodies, but you can see it's not like, well, because we are all women, we have to follow the same kind of things. It's actually made up by different cultures. So that's where, like, if we made people aware of this kind of cultural differences, you can see, well, if it's not the same here and it's different there, maybe we can just challenge it. So it's changeable. So it's this kind of thing.
So getting on to your change, do you think the mechanisms are just the slow mechanisms of passing information on, introducing people to new ideas? Do you think that's really the only way forward, or are there more tangible, more direct things we can be doing?
I think it does take time. This social change, especially people's attitudes and thinking, it does take time. And as I said before, like starting as early as from the early years is better, like gender sensitivity of the early years practitioners. So sometimes people, I mean, everybody has their own subjectivities, they have their own experiences,
yes,
childhood experiences and things, and they all carry them with them when they come to work in this setting. It's impossible. I mean, there's some argument on professionalization of this early year sector, saying, well, everybody needs to work on the same kind of standards and things, but it's really hard because this is a very emotional job. And
absolutely. And we're humans, not robots.
Yeah, we are all humans, and we are doing this job with all the humans and the humans of the future. So we do come with our experiences, but we can't really say, well, you have to leave your experience out of this room when you enter your classroom, when you interact with your children. But what we can do is to make teachers reflective about their experiences and how they might impact on their interactions with children in different ways, and be aware of that. For example, gender. So some teachers might hold that kind of gender stereotypes, and they might unconsciously or consciously interact with children in certain ways. I mean, from my interviews with Scottish teachers, they are doing this quite well.
Okay.
But if you look at from the other side, look at Hong Kong teachers and the mainland Chinese teachers, then you can see some impressive occasions. For example, if you're in a room and there are some seats, some chairs, but there are more children, then the teachers would ask a boy who is already sitting on a chair to stand up and give his seat to a girl, saying, could you please give your seat to her because you are a man? This kind of things. And when some boys are like crying in the sense like, don't cry, boys, don't cry.
I can give you also a very bad one.
I
saw a boy hit a girl and the teacher intervened. This is a while back now. Not that long ago though. And she was quite irate, so obviously not ideal anyway. But her reaction was, boys don't hit girls. And I just couldn't believe it. I think that was in the early days of me being a practitioner. And I just thought, how you can say something like that and not catch yourself in the mirror.
Yeah.
And stand aghast. And you're passing that on. So yeah, you're not dealing with the situation properly, and you're actually promoting
Yes.
negative.
Children get that very quickly. Yeah, they get everything from the society, and they are actively responding to those things.
It's amazing how sensitive they are, and things you don't realize until they
crop up. So we don't need to treat them as like innocent babies or something. They are actually equal people like us.
Absolutely,
and they have their thinking, they have their ways of acting to people and things. They make sense of their surroundings and react in certain ways. So it's very important in terms of that as well.
Are there any countries that you found in your research to be leading the way in terms of promoting positive gender? I'm thinking of the Nordic countries.
The Nordic countries are actually better.
On the other hand, they haven't necessarily got higher figures of men in early years. They've just got more gender reflexive men, and they're just more aware of their own gender.
It seems like Norway does have more men.
Okay.
Like it's over 10% at the moment, almost reaching 20%, because they've launched a few policies before. But recently, I think some academics from Norway said it's declining a little bit at the moment. So it's more than, but for me, I don't think it matters and doesn't matter in terms of the number of men.
We spoke about this, didn't we?
Yes, because I mean, when I say it matters, it's because by having more men, then it might change people's thinking, like, oh, this is not just a women's job, and men can be caring and things. This is especially true in for example, in Scotland, because they've got so many deprived areas, whereas those fathers and those men are always violent at home. Mm. So that's the only experience children might have with a man in their life. So having men in the early years would change this by showing the children, well, you can have safe men, caring men, nice men, working with you, interacting with you. And
so you're challenging that stereotype you're developing at home.
So in that sense, men having more men in this sector does
matter.
The
other sense, isn't
there? But on the other hand, for example, again about China, as I said, even if there are so many men working in the early years, the reason for this is because one, at first, because the Chinese society think boys are too feminized at the moment. That's something happens in this country, in the UK, a few years ago. It's not that strong in this country now, but I think it still happens sometimes. Mm-hmm. But it's very strong in China because we think boys are so girly at the nowadays.
Yeah.
So they want more men to go into kindergartens and teach the boys to be men.
Yeah.
That's one thing. And also because it's very hard for people to find a job now in China. So some of them think, well, being a kindergarten teacher in a public kindergarten and you get a tenure is actually a good job because it's steady, the welfare is nice, the salary is nice. So it's well respected from that perspective.
So
as
less
well.
Prestigious, but when it's so competitive, then that actually raises the
challenge. Yes, especially if you compare like public kindergartens and like private kindergarten, you do see institutional differences as well.
Yeah.
Same as here. Okay. If you work for early year centers in a sense, or if you work for primary nurseries, it's also different. Yeah, but so many of those men in Chinese societies, when they do work in kindergartens, they are actually reproducing hegemonic reinforcing gender stereotypes by saying, well, men and women think differently. I always find my communication with the other female teachers difficult because they don't understand me, because I'm a man, because they are all women.
I've never experienced that in a school where the men have talked out women in generalized. That's interesting that you...
Yeah, because I think this culture is more individualism. So you take people as individuals a lot.
Yes.
That's what I get from my participants in Scotland. So when I ask people about whether you think you and the other female teacher or you and the other male teacher are different or not, they always say, I think we are different because we are all different individuals and we all have different personalities and experiences. Mm-hmm. But if you ask men in Chinese, they just say, we are different because we are men and they are women. We have different thinking, we have different ways of doing things and all this kind of thing. So this is something you should like challenge to some extent.
Yeah, sure. And Gary Wilson had an interesting idea. He said equal representation, it's just never going to happen, so it's not even going for it. He said one way around that is to have older boys within your school work in early years and make them teach things that aren't stereotypically masculine. So things like reading, cooking.
Yeah.
And I thought that was quite a clever way of working around that deficit.
It is,
and
you're
using the leaders of the school, and you're also encouraging those year six children to be caring.
But another thing to mention is also we need to be careful about the kind of binary thinking, because it's
we always think things
in a way that this is right or wrong, this is women or men, this is something usually for boys and this is something usually for girls, and we just swap it, like we make it something usually for boys and make it more girls as well, and this is something more for girls and we make it more girls as well. So we're always like two sides,
and it swings from one side.
Yes, and before this we talked a lot about men and women, and we are kind of ignoring a lot of other groups, like other LGBT groups within that. Mm-hmm. So the gender diversity is more than just being a man and a woman. So there are many, many all different kinds of types of being and people, I would say. So just to avoid this kind of binary.
That's interesting, because we were talking in our last network meeting about how early transgender LGBT should be introduced and potentially how. Do you have any feelings on that? Because most people, I think, will soften to the stereotypes within gender, but some people, I think, would be more potentially just against educating children, that sort of thing early. What sort of feelings do you have on that?
I think, for me, I think it doesn't mean if you don't teach or educate children about these things, then it doesn't exist. It's everywhere. Because in many Scottish settings, you find girls, boys who like wearing skirts and girl stuff and doing that kind of things. That's everywhere from a very early age. Mm. I mean, there's no need to find out why they are doing this. I mean, we just let it go. Let them do what they like. And this happens in a traditional society in China as well. Like, just like myself, I like to play with girls when I was young. And I do know a lot of my friends are like this, or some of the girls who like to be tough and to have short hair and things like that. And that's everywhere. But if we don't teach about this, we suffer a lot.
Yeah.
Like I suffered a lot when I was young. People call me little girl, little women, things like that, until I was in university, I think. Okay, it happened throughout my childhood experience. I think even now, not just the Chinese children, but many children here as well, they are still suffering these kind of things. So we really need to show children we are all different, and we have all different kinds of ways of being a people, being a human, and we need to gain respect in terms of that. And it goes well beyond gender as well.
Absolutely.
Race, ethnicity, social class, every aspect.
Yeah. I always struggle with the concept of gender itself, and I always sort of struggle with the question, what would happen if we just didn't have it? Would it just boil down to personality and, you know, us as individuals? I wonder if you've got any thoughts on that, if it wasn't there in an autumn society.
But it's hard, because...
You mean biologically, or do you just mean we just ignored...
Well, that links in with, is gender biological, or is it a social construct, doesn't it, as well?
Yeah. I mean, no one says either. Most people say both, don't they? But I guess to what degree, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's complicated, because even if you say, what if there's no gender, there's still ethnicity, race, social class, and many other different identities. And it's all created by our humans in different social contexts and in different historical contexts, and it's all there. So all we need to do is just to understand them and know how they work, so that we know how we should make sense of ourselves to these different categories and labels.
Yeah.
So for me, I always say to my friends, both in China and the UK, I think sociology should be a compulsory subject for everybody. I think it's important for everybody to know why this society is organized in such ways, and why we are who we are, these sociological thoughts and sociological ideas, so that we know better about the world and we know better about ourselves.
I think psychology at sixth form was so interesting for me, and it opened my brain to just how you can come across things that are blind spots in your consciousness, and you know how memory works and how poorly it works sometimes. I think knowing the mechanisms helps you to break down the issues themselves.
I have to say sorry to you, but I'm not a big fan of psychology.
Oh, okay, we'll have to have part ways
there. Because I think in current society, science subjects are very powerful, because we follow all different medical suggestions and all different kinds of things, and they are so powerful because of the Enlightenment and the kind of things happened in the past in Europe about the science subject and how they become powerful. But again, those things are created by our humans, and it was created at certain time for certain people's benefits. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't really apply to everybody. We need to be very careful about those science things. Like, for example, a very simple thing. We said like an apple a day keeps the doctor away. Yes. But for many people, maybe they just can't afford an apple a day. Mm-hmm. What happens to those people? Do they just die without an apple every day? So this is also created by certain scientists saying where we need to eat. Like, if you go to Tesco or go to Asda, you always find on like fast food or ready food or something, like 5 apple or five something per day or per week keeps you healthy and things like that. Yeah. But how many people could afford that? Not everybody could pay for those kind of good things and things.
Yeah, it's marketing, isn't it?
And yeah.
Socialization, and that thing of socialization, you don't understand as a child. I would say I didn't really understand it in college. And only when I started going to university and learning about gender and societies that I really had a grasp of what it meant to be a human, an individual.
I think that's changing massively. So one of my colleagues, her child is at a secondary school, and she was telling me how they have non-gender specific sort of social clubs after school. And another positive sign, where I play football, and there's a really thriving female league now. And I mean, that's sort of half a generational step between me and myself and them. But when I was at school, I had one female friend that played football, whereas you're seeing four groups. I couldn't believe it. It was really good. Hopefully it's a positive step.
Yes. I think it's too fast, or we are still far away from saying we ignore gender completely. Because since we were born, we are attached with a gender. So you can't really say, well, we just ignore gender and do whatever we want. That's impossible at this stage, considering the wider social perceptions and environment. What we could do is, as I said before, is just to be gender sensitive. We need to bring it onto stage and say, well, this is about gender, but it can be understood in another ways, and it can be different. It's not just like, as you said, it's not just about being a person like football. Boys can play football or females can play football. It's more about like, well, if you see only boys play football more often, but we see so many women and females play football as well. So it's just to challenge the old images, but then gradually to become like more about, well, it's more about a person who likes doing certain things because they just like it, not just because, well, I'm a male or a female. So the kind of gender sensitivity is very important.
Avoiding the binary, I think that's a very good point.
Yeah, the binary thinking, yeah.
So just to round it off, because we've not got that much longer, maybe we can be more specific on this and you can expand, but what steps would you like to see schools taking?
I think it's within the whole education system, bring it onto stage, not just gender, but all different things like ethnicity, race and things. Mm-hmm. Make people aware of these differences, make people know how these differences are affecting our lives. For example, recently there are so many immigrants from the Middle East coming to the UK and to other European countries, and they might have different culture, different languages and different other things. Make the children aware of those things. We can discuss together. So one of my friends, she's another teacher, a lecturer at Leeds, and she once did an experiment, not an experiment, but it's her way of teaching her students how they should respect others. What she did was, one day she entered her classroom talking in Russian to her students, who are all English speakers, and asked them how do they feel after listening to her Russian, after coming to an environment of where you totally don't understand anything someone is talking about. It's like to make them experience the differences of this kind of thing. They might get a better sense of, well, this is how so many other people feel when they come to the UK. So we should help them, we should support them in that sense, because they are suffering, this kind of thing. So it's more about experiences of different categories.
Yeah, and that encourages them to cognitively empathize with them and understand, rather than just sort of otherizing issues.
It's more about understanding different things. And
that's a great point to end on, actually. Yeah. Thank you very much, Yui.
Thanks. Hope it's helpful.
Thanks for your time.
All right. Yeah, cheers.
Our next podcast will feature Dr. Simon Brownhill from the University of Cambridge. He's going to be talking to us about the concept of male role models within early years. Thanks for listening.